Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the BAMF podcast. I'm your usual host, Mike Lafferty, and we got a special show today. Talking about the Atomic Robo RPG. And first up, we've got the writer of Atomic Robo, Mr. Brian Clevenger.
Howdy.
Howdy. Really pleased to have you. Thanks for showing up, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We also got Mike Olson, who's well known for doing the Strange Fate versions of the Fate Rules and the Kerberos Club, the Fate version. So thanks for joining us, sir.
Thanks.
And we have a second-time guest, Mr. Fred Hicks, Internet Celebrity and RPG Luminary.
Oh, dear God.
As Internet Celebrity.
Micro fame.
Yeah, I know.
You're at least as famous as Ryan Macklin, right?
Oh, well, yeah. Ryan's just this guy, you know?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Well, hey, before we get started, any listeners who haven't checked out the Atomic Robo comic, you're doing the wrong thing by not reading that book. You should go out and pick it up right now.
Yes, you're doing the wrong thing with your life. Please correct that immediately.
I know, I was. But I fixed it.
You need to look at those choices you've made and go to your local comic shop or Amazon.com and pick up the trades because it's a great book. It's what comic books really should be. It's fun. It's pulpy. You know, on Twitter one time, I think I saw Brian refer to it as kind of more Indiana Jones than superheroes. I think that's probably an ideal way to kind of pitch it.
Yes, I agree.
Well, I almost want to take over the mic at that point. Brian, you have a manifesto on your site.
I create manifestos on like a daily basis. We have to narrow that down.
But it's actually linked to, it's actually labeled as like the manifesto for Atomic Robo.
Oh, right.
We talk about like things like no cheesecake and all these other things.
No retcons.
no retcons. Yeah. No. You know, screwed up continuity or anything like that.
What's the URL for that, Fred?
Well, I'll find that for your show notes.
Okay.
I'm not sure it's going to be. Well, you can go to atomic-robo.com to get like everything. But there's a link at the top, I believe, called The Promise. Yes, no angst, no cheesecake, no reboots, no filler, and no delays. I just want to call people's attention to that because I think when people really start digging into like Atomic Robo and going, why is this really nothing but awesome? I think that promise or manifesto has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, I would agree. Plus just, I mean, tons of fun storytelling. I could just...
Oh, well, that.
Yeah, well. Yeah, I just finished up the bit with Jack Tarrow.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that was a lot of, you know, he's a, you know, actually more of a pure pulp adventure set back in the era. And, you know, the bit at the end where Tesla and Edison are fighting like wizards, that was an awesome book.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say that Jack Tarrow volume, what was that, volume 4?
Five.
I get them mixed up. Is probably the one where it's closest to, oh yeah, Spirit of the Century in the Robo.
Yeah,
Year.
Definitely.
But you know, there's a lot of interesting vibe between the two, and I think that's part of what grabbed Brian's attention, that and Mike's work on Strange Fate. But Brian can talk about that.
In fact, I can. I don't even remember why I picked up Strange Fate. I think I was just interested in finally getting paid because I've been hearing about it for years. And in fact, a buddy of mine had Spirit of the Century, the first print run. I want to say it was hardcover, but I could be wrong. It was this big old book.
Hardcover makes it very likely it was the first print.
There you go. So yeah, this had to be 2005 or 6 or something. And we flipped through it a few times. Like, okay, yeah, we'll do this next. You know, we're all into pulp stuff. And that game just never came to fruition. So, you know, years later, here I am, end of 2011, and everywhere I go for RPG discussion, people are talking about Fate. So I quickly put together, there's like a million versions, and I'm like, well, okay, I'll just pick one. And it ended up being Mike's version, simply because I think that somebody was talking about how it was a lot of 19th century material, which, you know, I'm a big fan of that era of literature and pre-pulp, if you will. And the mechanics just really were interesting. You know, really quick summary was, you know, kind of build up your own powers in a way that the other games, I guess, tend to have lists and things. I could be wrong. I don't know what the hell I'm saying. So I picked that up, and the rules were just, it was like a beginning of a new life for me as far as RPGs. It was like everything I wanted a whole bunch of other games I played previously to do, but, like, that was the mission statement. You know, this is how Fate works, and... So, yeah, I was on board.
That was Spirit of the Century for me. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, what a big, huge change. Just a revelation.
And
so
thanks.
That's very flattering.
Oh, well, you're welcome. You did a great job with it. And then when reading Spirit of the Century later, after Mike's version of Fate, it was like, by page two, it was like, oh, this is the Atomic Robo RPG. Why have we been looking for all these years for this when it was here all along?
When you first started talking with me, because you had initially started talking with Mike about the possibility of doing the RPG, but when I got into the mix through I think it was a happenstance Twitter conversation.
Yeah, pure random chance.
Yeah, pure random chance. I'm like, I love Robo, and you're like, we should talk. I started sending you like, okay, here have all of the like these various PDFs we have here. Have Diaspora, here have Dresden Files, and you're like, I need to have time, Fred. But
I made time.
Yes. It was just very entertaining because, you know, as I was seeing Mike get his discovery of the Atomic Robo comic more and more into his head, I was, you know, at the same time seeing this almost parallel thing of you get going through more and more of the Fate material that was out there. It was pretty entertaining. I because I'm like, I know this is going to hook each of these guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So really, my role as drug peddler is complete.
Well, Brian's the one who, I mean, got me started on Atomic Robo. I'm so embarrassed to say that I've never read it.
Started in a way.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he was the one who like emailed me and said, "Here's a PDF of like this issue," and I started reading it on page two. I was like, I had to email him and say, "Okay, I'm in. What can we do?" Because it was just I was just so taken by it immediately. Like I just got it. But I'm so embarrassed that I've never read it before. I can't believe something.
You should be.
I am. I read a pretty wide variety of comics, and that should have been in there, but I don't know. I don't know what happened. Just wasn't at the SLCS.
I'm a fan of blaming people who aren't present, so I think for that we should blame Morgan Ellis.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. Yeah, Morgan apparently, my friend Morgan, who I see at conventions all the time, and he runs Fate Hacks just like I do, and he had been a fan from the beginning and just literally never said anything to anyone until about the time you contacted me, Brian. Coincidentally, he happened to mention it to another friend of ours, Colin. And then they were talking about it on Twitter, and I was like, "What? Why did anyone mention this to me?"
It's one reason I try to pimp the Robo whenever I can, because when I found it, I was like, "This has been going on for years, and no one told me anything?"
Yeah.
I talk to you bastards about Green Lantern and Superman every week, and you never mentioned this great book? What's wrong with you?
Well, then I went into a comic book store not long after I talked to Brian. I was like, I wonder if they have Atomic Robo trades. And there was a really cool little Echo Park comic book store in L.A. And they did. And I'm like, oh, there you go. And I look in the back. It's like, this is nominated for Eisner's? How did I not hear about this? Why aren't they reading this? So, yeah, it was very embarrassing. I feel like I'm playing catch up with, like, the real true fans who have been along for the ride from the beginning.
Well, I'm right there with you. I think I'm still tracing down the World War II trade paperback. That's the only one I've been able to find yet. I don't know. My take on it is always that it's not the length of time that you've been a fan that actually matters. It's the depth of your fanaticism.
Yeah.
There you go. So just buy everything I do four or five times, and we'll call it even.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of everything you do, you're the sick mind behind the Warbot and accounting, right?
I did do that. Yeah.
Over on nuclearpower.com, and it's nuclear spelled N-U-K. L-E-A-R. That is the funniest, saddest thing I've ever read, sir.
Thank you.
That makes me a little weepy and smile at the same time.
Which I can't tell if it's a good thing or bad thing, but the artist and I, Scott, Zach Finfrock, we've just had a hard time getting our schedules to line up to write more and to produce more of them. We have in mind, I don't know if it would be like the last storyline, but it would be a great final one to do and end on because it is so much more depressing than everything else we've done in it so far. So I think the fact that we can't actually find, you know, the way to make it happen, I think is like the universe saying, don't do it. There is such a thing as too sad, and you found it.
Yeah, that breaks the laws of physics. It goes beyond the density of a black hole.
Exactly.
So Atomic Robo the RPG, it was announced, I want to say, a couple weeks ago.
And I think it's kind of like Dresden Files in that there's not really a firm release date. We're talking maybe this year, maybe next, depending on how things shake out.
Hopefully it won't be, you know, like the 5-year saga that the Dresden Files you know, RPG was. We're keeping the team a bit leaner on this, and you know, if with the Dresden Files RPG we could have said to Jim, hey Jim, could you write half the book? You know, maybe we'd have a lot of fans really angry with us because that would have delayed his novel schedule. But since we've got Brian on board for writing the setting portion of it, you know, and it's not a reinvent what Fate does in the meantime, and you know, spit out a side project and do all these other things. You know, I have a feeling we're going to be doing this a lot more briskly, and I'm really hopeful. It would be lovely to get it out in 2012, but you know, development is starting in a couple of weeks from now, really in earnest. Although Mike and I have had plenty of conversations, I think early 2013 is not out of the question.
Okay, I know I hadn't realized that Clevenger was actually going to be writing your setting section. That is very interesting.
Well, who better?
Well, I hope he realized it. I have a memory of him telling me he was going to, and if he's discovering it now, it's going to be a little bit embarrassing. But, you know, maybe embarrassment is the theme of this podcast.
It has been the past, sir. It has been the past.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I just hadn't seen that in your press release, so that's a big selling point. That is excellent.
Well, it says it's written by Brian and myself, so, like, who better to write setting information than
I think we should
the
switch.
Guy who writes it? I prefer not to. I'm really more comfortable with the thing I have, but that's something we can talk about
later. You got to push yourself, Mike.
Hey, you know, one time I interviewed Denny O'Neill back in the day when he was still, you know, the godfather of the Batman universe over at DC, and he described the Batman Bible to me as this, you know, huge tome that kept back on a bookcase that was, you know, weighed 20 pounds and listed everything that was real and wasn't real in the Batman universe. Do you have a similar kind of... no weighty volume for the Atomic Robo Bible?
I do, but it's all in my head.
Okay.
Which has been, that's actually currently, we are releasing a sort of side project in the comics. It's a bunch of short stories with different artists, and but they're all written by me because we have all these like little stories that aren't big enough for a full issue or are big enough for a full issue, but you couldn't really find anywhere to put them, so, you know, we have to pare them down into these short stories. And we would have loved to have it be like a real anthology with, you know, different writers and different artists, but Scott and I have tried really hard with the property of Robo to maintain a completely self-consistent history. You know, nothing like Marvel and DC where you have to reboot constantly and retcon constantly and, you know, whatever, just an actual, you know, here's 100 years or 120 years, whatever it happens to be, and here's just different stories throughout it. And there's because I watched way too much of James Brooks' Connections as a kid, it's not just a simple thing where, you know, history just starts here and then goes there. There is so much interplay back and forth through time as we reveal things, and then, like, actually, volume 3, 4, and 5 kind of show this, where Robo's been using this one kind of gun throughout the whole series. In volume 5, we have the story of where he got it, and then in volume 6, something happens to it. But and if you start with volume 6 or that's what you've read, it's like, oh, you know that's you understand what happens with the gun. But then if you also happen to read volume 5, it's like, oh, you know, this is a really big deal.
I'm going to be really pleased when we get to, like, volume, I don't know, 20 or whatever it is, and there's going to be all these little significant tie-ins all over the place that someone could read the volume 20 first and not necessarily get them, but then go back, read the historical stuff, and you know, on the second reading, all the stories have this much more going for them.
That's exactly what happened with me, because Brian sent me volume 6 first, like some issues of volume 6, and I read it. And then I went back later and read it from the beginning, and then suddenly, like, when I reread Volume 6, it just had, like, so much more weight. Like all these little references, like, hey, that's Sparrow's son, and that's, like, all these other little things. Suddenly I noticed that it was very, very,
Volume 6 really
10 times as enjoyable. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yay! You guys have no idea what we're setting up for Volume 9. Oh, my God, it's going to pull your mind.
But one of the things about Brian writing the setting portion of the book is, it's kind of an expand to fit model in that, you know, we're going to try to dial in and figure out exactly how much space we need for the system portion of it, and whatever we have left, we're like, Brian, go to town, you know. And I think we're going to get a lot of interesting, like, material that sort of delves into the sides and corners of the Rovo universe that at least we aren't expecting to see in the next three novels, or have seen in the novels, next three volumes.
Someone's used to talking about Dresden Files.
Yeah.
I want to see the She Devils.
Yeah. Okay. We're doing it.
All right. So let's take care.
Hey, let's say someone was up to listen to the podcast and just filled with enthusiasm for this project and thought, "Hey, when can I get on the beta playing? You know, beta test group for this." Would they need to check back with you guys in 6 to 8 months, or is there already a list forming for that? Or
I've had people email me.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine there are going to be people local to Mike and myself that, and Brian, that are going to see some incidental, playtesting, internal ones. We don't necessarily have a plan because we don't have a timeline for when the when we would be, doing a more open playtest thing. If people are following my blog over at deadlyfriendly.com, if we do a more open, wider scope playtest, I'll be announcing it there.
Okay, that's good. Well, hey,
anyway.
Understood. It's still in development, it sounds like. So,
yep.
Everything's still taking shape. Well, guys, I know you're all real busy. You don't take up too much of your time, and things are pretty early right now. Is there anything else you want to cover before we call the podcast?
We could talk just a little bit about sort of what the goals are that we have for the RPG. We want to support, as with Dresden Files, we wanted to make sure that we're making a game that really makes whatever you do in it feel like it's from the property. So, you run off and do whatever in another corner of the world, it's still going to feel like an Atomic Robo story. So, towards that, we're going to have Brian writing a bit of GM advice on essentially how to construct an Atomic Robo-style plot. Mike and I have been talking about supporting multi-era play because the comics jumps all over the timeline. That's how you get to play potentially Carl Sagan in 1971 if you want.
That was a great cameo, by the way, Brian.
Thank you.
I don't even know what counts as a cameo. I saw him as like a, if I want to play in 1971, my character. That's what
he had a gun.
He had a gun.
Carl Sagan, action scientist.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of scientists in the Roboverse are action-y. But yes. What else am I? Oh yeah. Well, I mean, we're kind of shifting the orientation from where you do that somewhat more involved character creation with phases and so forth. We're gonna. That's always an option for people, but the default positioning for Robo is going to be more of a on the fly implementation where really people can sit down and within 5 minutes they can start playing the first adventure.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, because we really want people to be able to dive in and start playing right away. And that's also to support that multi-era thing, right? If you sit down the next week and two of your players aren't able to make it, you go, okay, well, we've only got two players, but you're playing Robo already. Why don't we jump back to 1971 and do another part of the story that involves Robo and who else? I want to play Carl Sagan. Okay, cool. Five minutes later, you got at least the starting bits of what you need. Sagan, billions and billions, astronomer, action scientist, whatever. You've got a few things down, and you're able to start playing, and then you can fill in the details as needed, if needed.
I love that Sagan's our go-to example of a guy to play in history, but Carl Sagan, really?
Geeks, we're selling this game mostly to geeks, and I figure if they're already responsive to Atomic Robo, they're also going to be people who are going to be pretty responsive to playing Carl Sagan.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I actually saw Carl Sagan speak back when I was in college. He was surprisingly charismatic in person. But, well, cool. Yeah, I love it when an RPG actually gets into the pickup game niche, because so few do. It's just great when you sit down at the table and literally be going in 5 or 10 minutes, because it's so rare in this genre.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say that I've been influenced a little bit by what they recently did with Gamma World, because, you know, I thought, oh, it's a 4E derivative. It's going to take forever to get started with the character. Nope. You know, you could sit down and half an hour later be, you know, starting your adventure. That really spoke to me. And you know, it's almost a little bit of a retro intent, I guess. But
well, you know, these days we all have a big filter. Everybody I know who's gaming, I mean, most of us are at least 30 or older, and you tend to have serious jobs and kids, and it gets hard, mm-hmm. you know, spend 5 hours doing character generation.
Yep, and, you know, with Dresden, we've done our sort of committed campaign-oriented game. I think with Robo, it makes sense to do something a little bit different and more oriented on, you know, hitting those action, fast-to-play feels.
Plus, I'd like to think we'll bring in Atomic Robo readers who maybe never gamed before. And we want to get them to the story as soon as possible. You know, like, let's get into an Atomic Robo story right away and not have to wade through the rules or prep work or anything. Like, if these people are new to gaming, they might not have the patience or desire to go through something like that. So let's just go.
Well, really, I think the best licensed games are very good at sort of lubricating the crossover,
yeah.
you know, thing. You get, I know we've already gotten a few people who are... you know, Evil Hat fans go like, oh, I should check out that comic. You know, so even with the press release, we're already throwing some more audience towards Robo, which is good for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm hoping that we'll you know, get some people into checking out a Fate game that either haven't been interested in Fate before or even haven't tried gaming.
Yeah, I guess he has a quick gaming, you know, geek question. Mm-hmm. Whenever you talk about a license like Doctor Who or Dresden Files or, you know, even Smallville to go on a different system, you know, people, you know, you get one iconic character, you know, Superman, Doctor Who, Harry Dresden, or Atomic Robo. How do you handle system balance? Or with Fate, since it's narrative system, I guess that's maybe less of a concern, or what do you think?
I mean, how can Robo and Carl Sagan exist in the same story and contribute equally?
Exactly.
Well...
it didn't mean to something your guys.
It's hard to get into specifics because we haven't really begun development in earnest, like Fritz said. But you know, one thing that's common to all Fate games is just the existence of Fate points and aspects, whereby lots of people can. There are different ways to engage the conflict. You know, if physical conflict isn't your thing, there's got to be something else you can do, and Fate really gives you the tools to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Robo is a scientist through and through, but there's got to be a reason he put together Tesladyne and has a lot of other scientists around him, right? I believe he recognizes that A, he can't be everywhere at once, but B, he also needs people with lots of different scientific specialties who are going to delve and be more expert in certain areas than he is. Yeah, so there's that element of it, and you would probably see in a sort of a classic one person's playing Robo, other people are playing other scientists, a number of the non-Robo characters doing a little bit more of the I attack it with science kind of approach to problem solving, whereas Robo functionally in the story tends to be more of the strange robot powers plus punchy.
Yeah, and it also depends on the nature of the conflict. I mean, if it's just a straight-up boss battle with a giant robot, well, you've kind of tanned yourself into a bit of a corner. Although there's obviously, because Fate is just so adaptive, there's still some options there. But I'm thinking specifically of Volume 6, Robo spends that entire volume getting his ass handed to him and depending on everyone else around him to help him and to save him.
Yeah, and that actually highlights a thing that's similar to what we've... done in Dresden, and we may see a bit of in Robo. In Dresden, someone like Harry Dresden has many fewer fate points to start each session, and as a result, it's likely to get more hammered by, you know, compels and being made the target and that sort of thing. And I think you see some of that same effect happen with Robo. The threat in Volume 6 has gone after Robo far more than it's gone after Tesladyne, and that means that those other characters have maybe a little bit more flexibility to not get beaten up by the plot quite so much.
Yeah, they're not the ones who are on fire, so they're able to put out the fire that's on Robo.
Right. But I think Brian has also noted that Robo is not really going to be what breaks the system. I mean, you know, we'll be able to casually support, you know, ageless characters that exist across multiple eras and people playing different characters for each era, whatever, when people are doing multi-era play. The real problem is Jenkins.
I think that actually.
Brian, you said that you often throw the B plot into a volume because you need something to keep Jenkins busy from solving the A plot in 5 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey,
Jenkins is the problem.
I know there's been occasional sporadic speculation about Atomic Robo movies or cartoons or that kind of thing. If you're going to cast Jenkins in your, you know, ideal Atomic Robo movie, who would you put in that role?
That's a toughie. A classic Clint Eastwood from about 30 years ago.
That's cool.
That's a pretty good one. I mean, yeah, if you're doing dream casting, pluck an actor out of any time period in their career, that's definitely a fit.
I was thinking George Clooney, but I can understand why you might not want to go that way.
Clooney's good work. He's got the attitude.
Yeah.
Fassbender could possibly do it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything actually happening on the other media front as far as cartoons or movies in the Atomic Robo world? Or not?
We have a short animated film that was supposed to come out last year, but met some funding problems and should be coming out this year. We'll have more news on that later.
And that would be The Last Stop?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that going to be direct to DVD or in the theaters? Or?
Oh, it's just going to go to YouTube.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
Just free to everybody. Just, hey, Robo's cool. Look at it.
It's upon its magnificence and despair. All right, cool.
Well, precisely.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it then. Sweet. Okay. Well, what else are you working on these days, Mr. Clevenger?
These days I am all Robo all the time.
Excellent. Okay. Well, let's see. Looks like we've covered this subject pretty well. Fred, anything else you want to dive into?
I think I've added enough length to your episode already.
It's like, I know you guys are, you know, busy professionals, you know, paragons in your field that won't take up too much of your time.
The field of shelter.
Yes, we need to go back to making entire dozens of dollars.
Stimulate the economy, it's patriotic duty. So, Hey guys, I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
And until next time, folks, stay tuned, and we'll catch you next episode of the BAMF Podcast.